with me, breathe in me. Oh, you lovers, breathe in me, burn in me. Oh, you lovers, burn in me. Flow together.
Hello, everybody. This is T-Thorn Coyle. Welcome to Elemental Castings. Today, we are cycling back to the element of air, to breath, that great enlivener and connector, to thought, to music, to sound, to the first rays of the sunlight at dawn. And today, I have a really special guest, Jason Pitzel Waters. He is the creator of the Wild Hunt blog and the host of the music podcast, A Darker Shade of Pagan. In addition to his online pursuits, Jason has done freelance writing and journalism, hosted a radio show, worked as a club DJ, and been involved in several fine art-related projects. Welcome, Jason.
Hi, thanks. It's great to be here.
So first, I'd like to just start with a brief prayer. So if everyone can take a breath with me, I'd like to invite in all the sacred elements, air, fire, water, earth, and ether that make up our sacred bodies and this sacred universe we live in. And I'd like to say, Holy Mother, in whom we live, move, and have our being, from you all things emerge, and unto you all things return. So Jason, you have been involved in music in some form or another for a lot of years, and I'm wondering if you can talk about how you entered that field.
Well, I've always been a big fan of music ever since I was a little kid, but I didn't really have any sort of musical talent for playing an instrument or for singing for that matter. People would pay me not to sing, that sort of thing. But but I was always fascinated by the radio and by broadcasting, and I always kind of felt there was sort of an inherent power with being able to broadcast myself. And when I moved to Illinois some 10 years ago now, I guess, I got involved in a local community radio station, and I ended up hosting my own program there for around 6 to 7 years. And I also did a lot of committee work with the station behind the scenes as well. And that was just a lot of fun. And basically, it was one of those things where it really fulfills all your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during that time when I was in Illinois that I was also working as a club DJ and a promoter. And then when I moved away from Illinois, I decided I didn't really want to stop broadcasting in some fashion. And so I started the podcast, sort of a continuation of what I was doing before.
So the podcast is a Darker Shade of Pagan, in which you, it's basically hosting a radio show via podcast. Is that correct?
It is. It's basically just a radio show, except that it's a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's also hosted on the Pagan Radio Network as well, where they stream it. But it's all on the internet. There's no terrestrial radio stations that I know of that are playing it. But A Darker Shade of Pagan actually started off as a special that I would do once a year on my normal radio program, where I basically started finding these bands that I kind of felt spoke to the pagan spirit and like the pagan soul, and that hit me harder than what was supposed to be pagan music, I guess,
right,
at the time.
All the pagan folk music.
Yeah, or the pagan filk music.
Right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. it's just that it didn't really move me. And so I started discovering all these artists, and I decided that I was going to use that opportunity to kind of create a new paradigm for what could be a pagan music and what could be spiritual music, instead of just, the regular circle chants,
right,
or thing. Not that there's anything wrong with chanting. It has its place and it has a powerful place. But I think that to a certain extent, I feel that in some sectors, pagan music kind of got stunted a little.
Mm-hmm.
You know about Gwydion Penderfyn.
Yes.
And I think that he was such a strong influence on the birth of like American pagan music that and that it seems like almost that a lot of artists haven't like gone past what he like what he did. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and I think there's that, and then coupled with what we need for ritual, which is more chant-based, chant-oriented, rather than, we don't use songs. You know, we're not standing around in a circle holding a hymnal.
Exactly.
And yeah. So the simpler chants are easier for people. I know sometimes people tell me my chants are too complicated. You know, I add in syncopation and things like that. And then 5 years later, I'll return and they've all turned into dirges. It's just too difficult to have the kind of musical sophistication that you're talking about, I think.
Oh, yeah.
But we can't go out to a nightclub and dance to that.
No, not really. Although, you know, I've heard some really excellent remakes of some pagan chants tuned to the dance floor.
Really?
Yeah. Well, for instance, the English band Incubus Succubus
right.
did a remake of the traditional goddess chant,
mm-hmm.
and which was interesting.
The Isis Astarte one?
Yeah, the Isis Astarte and Inanna.
Hecate.
Mm-hmm. Demeter, Kali, you know.
Right.
So, and then also there's another band, Unto Ashes, who did a beautiful rendition of the Witch's Rune,
mm-hmm.
Which is a little bit more complex, obviously, than like the Goddess Chant or Hoof and Horn or something like that. And and I actually use a clip of that to start off every one of my podcast programs, where they're singing the Echo Echo,
right.
Kernunos, Echo Echo Aradia. And I always thought that was a really powerful statement. So I think that, you know, I think chanting can be used in a more complex song structure. I just think that, you know, I don't know, I'd also think it's kind of a generational shift,
mm-hmm.
in the way pagans have been starting to think about music. I think that, you know, when modern paganism in America kind of really got rolling, it was the, you know, late 60s and
right.
the 70s. So I think that there was a sort of folk music aesthetic and sort of the circle chants kind of aesthetic was really the thing, you know, at the time. And I think just the whole idea of creating a pagan music itself was completely revolutionary. And, you know, so I think that, you know, that's why it was so powerful and why it still has so much resonance today in the festival circuit.
I think that's true. I think it was a product of its times. But I also have a feeling there's something else going on there, Jason. And that is that, especially in the early days of the pagan revival, we so wanted to hearken back to ancient roots.
Yeah.
And so folk music is a natural way to do that. You know, it's the music of the people, and, you know, electronica just doesn't fit that bill. You know,
yeah.
the ancient pagans didn't have synthesizers and drum kits. So I think that I'm wondering if that's part of it, is that sort of romanticization of the past.
Yeah, I think that is, you know, and it's the same way that you'll see pagans show up to ritual wearing bodices.
Right.
You know, not that there's anything wrong if you really dig a bodice, you know, that's great.
Hey, I dig a bodice.
But hey, you know, all more power to all the bodice wearers out there. but I think that there's something sort of, I guess, like, revivalist about it.
Yes.
Sort of affected.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I don't I don't wear a, you know, a poofy shirt when I go to the store,
right.
You know. And I think that to a certain extent, moving into modern times is difficult because we're trying to reconstruct something that's ancient.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to reach back to what seems like the most you know, the most pure essence of oldness.
Right.
And, you know, that really all goes back to the folk revivals in Britain,
mm-hmm.
where, like, Cecil Sharp and people like that, the song catchers, kind of announced that the folk songs of old England were really these like, archaeological, like, survivals
right.
of the old pagandom. And I think that kind of idea has just kind of carried on.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, I think a lot of artists, and even modern artists who have broken away from the folk structure, still sort of have a romantic view of the folk structure that still, I mean, I think a lot of modern genres like neo-folk and the new psychedelic folk bands that are kind of emerging now, they all kind of embrace wholeheartedly the sort of romantic idea of the ancient pagan like song structures that mm-hmm. have survived somehow through folk bits.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always believed that, I mean, some of my most holy moments have been working as a DJ in a club. And, you know, and I mean, I've had some holy moments certainly with like working in groups and going to traditional pagan events. But I tell you, there's been moments where I've been in a club DJing and you get that song structure just right and everybody crowds to the dance floor. And it's like nothing you can ever really compare to. It's mm-hmm. so overwhelmingly powerful.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great book, I don't know if you've ever read it, it's called Last Night a DJ Saved My Life.
No.
Well, it's a history of the DJ, and they actually start off by talking about how, in their opinion, the shamans were like the original DJs.
Right.
You know, they were the ones pounding out the beats that everyone danced to and providing the drugs.
Right.
You know, and I think that to a certain extent, you know, club culture is sort of a manifestation of our ongoing need to sort of reach out to some sort of sacred, ecstatic experience that's communal.
That's really fascinating. I do a lot of magic in nightclubs and on the dance floor. Often wearing bodices. It's funny, I'll wear corsets and bodices more often to a goth club than I will to a ritual, right? Who wants to do ritual in a corset? I certainly don't.
No.
But I really find it very powerful to harness that energy that's being raised and move with it and let it move through me, and of course lending my energy to it. And I often find that if I'm working closely with a deity, the deities will show up to participate in that act. A friend of mine who is a heathen shaman does a lot of work with his gods also on the dance floor. And I can always tell when he's working, you know, when something's moving through him. And I don't dance as close to him in those moments as I might otherwise, you know, bumping into people on the dance floor. I try to give him a little space to do whatever working he's doing with his gods. Do you know other people that do that sort of work?
I do. Well, I mean, I suppose for a lot of the people I've witnessed who I feel are like that, I think some of them, I don't know if they do it consciously.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interesting thing is because most of my DJing has been within like the goth dark wave scene. And I think what's interesting about the aesthetic in those scenes is that unlike if you go to like a more techno sort of event, the dancing is very isolated in a goth setting.
Right.
Everybody respects everybody else's personal space.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that really, but yet there's still a lot of people around, but nobody's trying to, you know, get up on everybody's grill,
right,
so to speak. And I think that really creates sort of a better opportunity to kind of head into your own personal sacred and invoking your own powers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've certainly met people for where dancing is an act of prayer, an act of ecstatic ritual, and some consciously and some not consciously.
Mm-hmm.
But you can tell it's like a religion. Why else would you go out on a dreary Tuesday,
right,
to some club, you know, and sometimes not a very good club, depending, you know, just, you know, to hear, in essence, sometimes the same songs every
mm-hmm.
week, if not for some sort of religious sacred experience for you. You know, I think that it's almost like a church, but not a church.
Well, and even the costume factor, you know, dressing for ritual.
Exactly, yes.
Definitely happens in club culture. It's a strong part, especially in the goth club culture. But every club culture has its ritual garb.
Yes. No, definitely. And, you know, everyone has its own, every club and every scene has its own rules and its own, you know, protocols.
Right.
And Yeah, and it's always very fascinating. You know, I just said, you know, it's just the goth scene is where I've had most of my experience. But yeah, it's, you know, it really is kind of like the modern sacred festival experience. You know, we don't really have the sort of communal festivals here in America that they had in England still, or that were, you know, happening in the old times.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it used to be that there were festivals all the time and that there were communal festivals and people would gather together. And that really doesn't happen nowadays in our sort of internet-driven individualist culture.
Well, I agree. It probably doesn't happen. Well, although, you know, in the olden times, it probably only happened a couple times a year because people were scattered and doing their own thing, whether it was farming or working in the early factories. So I'm wondering, actually, Jason, if
yes.
contemporary music festivals probably don't, they probably happen about as often as the old pagan festival gatherings would.
Well, I guess that's true. I guess the big festivals anyway, sort of,
yeah.
the summer festivals,
I guess
you could say, you know. But I guess what I think it's unique is just the club kind of circuit where
mm-hmm.
people, you know, do it every week
right.
or, you know, or even more than once a week. And I think that, or even if they just do it once a month, that's more often than a lot of Americans at least go to church
mm-hmm.
or experience any sort of regular sort of sacred experience.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I always, and I guess that's why I've always been kind of, you know, and there's always been sort of a crossover between the pagan community and, like, the goth, dark, like, communities. There's always been a little, like, overlap there. But I've always been surprised how resistant a lot of pagans have been to exploring sort of newer, you know, modes of ecstatic experience. That they still kind of think that you have to have the fire and the people dancing around the fire and the drummers next to the fire and the, you know, and there has to, and they have to be getting the right chants going. And it just seems to me that, you know, especially since so many of us are urban pagans, you know, living in an urban environment, that just isn't something we can experience very often.
I agree with that. Although it's understandable that the technology of the row of drummers and the big bonfire and the dancers sweating under the night sky, that technology really works.
Oh, yeah.
And it really connects in with us. And it's easy to think that we can't have that in our day-to-day lives. I think it's more a matter of disconnection and compartmentalization. You know, when you're used to having your high ecstatic experiences in this special place, you just don't think you can have it
anywhere else.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's definitely one reason though why I love club culture, because I can tap into that. And it is so contemporary. You know, the dancing around the fire feels, well, actually they both feel really primal to me because it just feels like basic human activity.
Yeah, and I don't want to kind of set up this paradigm where I'm doing kind of an either or.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more of an and.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we all kind of know that the drumming and the fire and the chants is sacred and it works and that it's sort of this click that happens deep within us when we experience those kind of things. But I think that, you know, but I what I'd like to see more of is that and also this can be a sacred experience and
right.
also this.
Right.
You know, and I think that's really, you know, because I don't ever want to seem like I'm coming off like I'm dismissing like old traditions, because I'm actually kind of an old school romantic at heart.
Mm-hmm.
I really do have sort of a, I guess, traditional outlook on my culture and the world. And I don't ever want to see, you know, these things, old ways be eliminated,
right.
you know, for the purpose of the new ways. But I just think that the new ways are, you know, are popular and work for a reason as well.
One reason the new ways are helpful to me as a spiritual person and a magical practitioner is not only the sheer amount of energy available that we talked about already, but it reminds me that my gods are contemporary. My gods have changed just along with the rest of humanity. And why wouldn't they? You know,
yeah.
My gods do not have to be these anthropomorphic entities walking around in long robes, you know.
Exactly.
And why can't my gods be in a nightclub dancing alongside me?
Yeah, and you know, I think that's an excellent, excellent point. And you know, the one thing that really struck that home for me as a pagan growing up was that when I started reading up about voodoo and Santeria and other Afro-Caribbean religions, was that is how the Loa were contemporary.
Right.
They ruled over cars and streets and lotteries and, you know, they used aerosol cans for spells and they weren't afraid to modernize.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, I used to think that the only way to connect to the pagan gods were to do ancient seeming things.
Right.
You know, like I had to find the branch of the certain tree and treat it in a certain way if I wanted to do a certain thing, and you know, or if I wanted to leave an offering, I had to find a certain grove or something. And you know, and I think that's changing. I think that we're slowly realizing that the gods want to be contemporary. They don't want to be frozen as these sort of toga-wearing stereotypes, like in Clash of the Titans, where they're sort of, you know, glowing from behind their heads. And
unleash the Kraken.
Exactly. Unleash the Kraken. You know, I loved that movie, by the way, as a kid. I watched it like 1,000 times. But you know, I think a lot of us do think of them in that way. You know, we think of them as this sort of, as sort of these static characters who are powerful, but are sort of upholding this almost conservative idea of like spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's kind of weird. I mean, I think that, you know, Wicca sort of started at least, and Asatru both started as kind of conservative movements.
Right.
They were, you know, they were revolutionary for what they were doing, but they were also trying to like hearken back to this conservative. So more conservative than Christianity even, because it was even older and even more traditional. And, you know, and I think that we still have a little bit of that, you know, in our DNA,
mm-hmm.
you know, like collectively. But, you know, I really think that we're really kind of, and I think that what I'm kind of doing with A Darker Shade of Pagan is trying to contemporize the deities. Because whenever I find any kind of song that is a kind of a modern praise song for a deity, I always play it. Like, I found it an amazing disco, like, anthem to Athena.
That's great.
By this band called Hercules and the Love Affair.
Oh, yes, right.
And they're this amazing, like new disco band. And it's a whole song about Athena, and the guy who's behind Hercules and Love Affair is this gay man, and he talks so movingly about Athena really inspired him throughout his life, and so he had to write this song for her, you know. Or when I hear another band called Demonica and the Darklings, but they do a song for Hecate,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it's a very modern song. It's not an ancient seeming song, you know. And I think that, you know, works like that are so vital, because they show people that these gods are here now and inspiring us forward. And they, you know, they can be the old gods, but they can also be the new gods.
Well, and if all space and time is here now, why, you know, both can definitely be true. And just as I hopefully evolve as a human, the gods evolve.
Yeah. You know, and I think that, you know, the more I learn, the more I realize that human beings really haven't changed that much as far as the gods are concerned. I read an article once about a scholar who posted some prayers left to Zeus, and a man left, and you usually think about the ancient peoples leaving these prayers that are very, you know, serious. And there's this guy who really wanted to know what happened to his pillows and his bedding. someone stole his pillows and his bedding, and he really wanted Zeus to do something about it.
Probably his pissed off lover.
I know, and so whenever I think of I've been to rituals, right, and there's usually someone who's like, oh, I wish Zeus would really help me out on that test, and inevitably someone else will go, God, I can't believe you asked him that. You're supposed to ask him really serious stuff.
Right.
But I think that, I think the gods really understand. They're cool with the fact that sometimes we just need help on that test.
That's right.
But anyway, so that's kind of a tangent there. I didn't
That's
need to get
okay.
off that.
I want to take us back to something you said at the very beginning about the power of broadcast. Since we're talking about air here.
Okay.
What did you mean by that phrase? You know, I'm just thinking of those airwaves.
Yeah. Well, I really think that, you know, I guess from a young age, I grew up in Omaha, which back then was not very cool.
Is it cool now?
Apparently,
people in Omaha.
apparently, there's some very hip indie rock bands now, like the Faint and other people are from Omaha.
Excellent.
So, but apparently now it's cool. But I don't live there anymore, so I guess I had no part of that coolness. But I guess I always felt like the radio was this sort of magical machine that gave me messages from beyond. And it always seemed like, the whole idea that there was this music and information just shooting through the air and coming out of my little magic box just seemed so completely magical to me, that it just seemed so, like, life-changing for me. Because,
right.
You know, really music sort of saved my life so many times, And the whole idea that not only was this music reaching me, but it was reaching hundreds or thousands of other people and changing their lives, and that maybe someday I could be in that position to be the broadcaster, that I could be behind that desk, picking out the songs that I felt were so important to me to play them for other people. And I just, the whole idea of that just seems so, provoking and so magical and so, revolutionary to me, that I just, I've always fell in love with it. And I guess that's why I feel the internet today has kind of replaced that in our collective consciousness. I think radio is kind of going the way of, like, CB radio and other, like, forms of communication. There'll always be radio, but I think people have kind of lost the kind of magical wonder they've used to feel about radio. And I think they kind of feel that now about the internet, like the internet can do anything.
Right.
all the internet has all the answers. People
right.
worship Google.
We often call it the oracle, right?
Yeah, exactly. It is like an oracle. It's, I read on a comic strip once that any sufficiently fast Googler is equal to any scholar, so it's like everybody has the world's information at its fingertips. And I think that, and what's interesting about the internet is that it made everybody is now a broadcaster.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is now can now have their own radio show, or their own soapbox, or their own magazine, or their own whatever they want. And I think that that's so revolutionary that a lot of the older forms of media really haven't even caught up to that. That's why there's so many violent changes going on. There's like all these magazines going out of business right now,
right.
And newspapers are toppling, and radio is kind of toppling as well. And it's just because it's become, everybody now has that power. And I don't know what the future of that is going to be. And I don't know if it's necessarily going to be always going to bring us great things, but it's really heady. It's kind of like you can tell you're living in interesting times.
Right.
And hopefully that's not a curse, that we're living in these interesting times. But, I think that's with the blogging and the podcasting. For me, is that it's so, I felt like if you feel that there is something missing, that there's some broadcast that should be there that isn't there, you can make it happen. And for me, that just seems like magic. That's magic right there. You bring something into the world that was never there before, and you change people's minds, and you can change the way people see things, and you can change reality. And that's magic as far as Crowley was concerned.
Right.
And it's certainly magic in the way a lot of people think about magic. And, you know, someone who was trying to make a documentary about pagans talked to me on the phone not too long ago, and she kept asking me about spells and magic. And, you know, do I cast spells? And I kept having to couch it in this language. I guess I do. And I'm like, if you mean by spells, do I stand over a cauldron and I stir it and I do a nice little rhyme about bubbling and toil and, you know, and then I don't really do that. But I believe I do magic every day. And, you know, in the fact that I'm constantly, you know, sending my voice out to thousands of people. And it's humbling to be doing that sort of broadcasting.
I want to talk about one facet of this, though, Jason, that I just want to play devil's advocate tiny bit. I agree with what you're saying, and I think we live in times of exciting possibility right now where things are cracking wide open. But there's a lot of information being available to us that isn't necessarily getting translated into knowledge, which I consider to be a problem. And to really work magic requires intention. And there's a lot on the net that lacks intention to me. And therefore, I wouldn't qualify it as magic. It's not priestly activity to me.
Yeah.
Now, what you have talked about, for example, in your club work and or your broadcast work, putting just the right songs together in just this order and fading them at just this moment, right? That carries your intention and your will, and you are trying to create a specific magical effect with that. It's not just random scattershot stuff, and it's not just someone complaining about her life on her blog.
Yeah.
You know, I often complain about the hyper-confessional blogosphere. I just don't care that much about your life. So there's, you know, the signal-to-noise ratio is very high on the internet because we don't have the filters. So do you have any insight into that?
I recently did another interview for an online zine, Sequential Tart, by the way, very excellent zine. But I said in there that I felt that people have kind of a problem with oversharing about their religion and about their lives in general. And I'm not a confessional blogger by any stretch. And I guess, you know, I guess I see your point in that for a lot of people, the internet is just another tool, like a hammer or a screwdriver. You know, it's a way to write a journal and have other people read your journal. And it's not magic per se.
Well, and you can use a tool well, or you can use a tool badly or inefficiently.
Well, and I think that as far as the magical intention goes into it, I guess what I see what I'm doing for myself, like for my blog, for instance, you know, when I started it, I felt that there was this thing that I'd like to see changed in the pagan community and for myself. And so I set out to change it and to create the change I wanted to see in the universe, or to be the change I wanted to see in the universe. And by doing that, you know, and by feeding that intention every day by the work I do, I feel that it's become, and over the years, it's kind of built up slowly into kind of its own entity. Like, I don't know if the Wild Hunt is me, or if I'm just a part of the Wild Hunt now, that it's its own entity.
Well,
really.
You name something the Wild Hunt, Jason. It's gonna kind of run away.
Well, you know, it was sort of a bowing to my patron a little bit.
Yes.
And I just felt like I really wanted to kind of bum rush the show. You know, I was sick and tired of what I was seeing in the pagan media, and I wanted to change the way we talked about things. And I think that, you know, and not just me, I think that me and a lot of other people in the blogosphere, for instance, and in the podcast-osphere, I don't know if it's the podcasting world, I don't know if there's a podcast-osphere, but I think that we have been changing our entire culture. And I think that So, and some of us very intentionally so. I think some of the bloggers are very intentionally working a sort of magic with their blog. You know, and I guess the confessional bloggers or the bloggers who are just talking about, you know, I woke up today and then I went and ate some Taco Bell and then my boyfriend yelled at me. And, you know, that's really, you know, that's, the day-to-day of humanity. But, right. You know, but I think that that's just a mirror of who we all are anyway. I think some of us are just, you know, going to work and having a normal day. And maybe occasionally we do some magic, you know, or we go to a festival or we do something.
Right.
But then some of us devote all of our time or a significant chunk of our time to doing that magic. And, you know, I guess the whole signal to noise and the bad information, you know, that's always going to be there. Humanity is not a neat and tidy organism. And, you know, we're always going to misuse tools and we're always going to, there's always going to be people who don't live up to the full potential of a tool, and there's always going to be people who don't really want to use the internet or the broadcast medium as a sacred, like, instrument, you know. But I think that it's sort of, you know, you can play a guitar and you can play a song, and it can be a good song, and you could be very good at playing that guitar, but it wouldn't be sacred. But then someone else could pick up that guitar and maybe even play the same song, and it's completely sacred, and it completely changes your life, and it's all about the intent. And I think that, you know, I think that in the end of the day, you know, it's the intent.
I agree. And for me, intention is the seed of our magic. Without intention, there really isn't magic occurring. And it's one thing I appreciate about your blog is I feel it is the intentional act of a priest. You know, I see what you're attempting to put out there. And I certainly, 90% of the time, try to do the same with my blog. It's an act of magic for me. And my only point earlier about this goes along with my earlier point about information versus knowledge. We're awash in these waves of information. It's coming at us from every angle. And it seems to me one of the acts of the priestess and priest is to attempt to guide people closer to a place where they can assimilate information and change it into knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Gnosis, I mean, that's what we're after, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think you're right. I think that, you know, the ones who really create, to who gain the audiences and create the change are the ones who are basically taking the role on the internet of a priest or a priestess or a shaman or a person who's there to reach out and grab the raw knowledge, you know, and turn it into wisdom. Or, you know, because that's, I really feel like what I wake up every morning and I basically absorb knowledge for 2 hours, you know, and then I try to turn some of that into at least some sort of wisdom. I'm not going to say that I'm profound every day. I'm certainly not. But I think I hint on moments of profundity. But I think it's all about, you know, people like us who are out there trying to shift the signal to noise ratio a little bit toward signal and away
mm-hmm.
from the noise.
Right.
You know, I think that's just a common goal throughout human civilization for the people who are always working to let more light in.
Do you have anything more to say? Any other thoughts on air and magic and writing or music or broadcasting? I mean, there's so much we could talk about.
I know. It's sort of like one of those, you know, cornucopia of topics where I could just kind of go anywhere. I guess, I've spent so much of my life recently, especially the last few years, have been so concentrated. I it's funny because I moved to Milwaukee about 2.5 years ago because my wife was here for a job, and we're going to be moving again. But these last 2.5 years has been sort of this intense, almost monk-like focus on the internet. I've been blessed to not really have a regular job during this time.
Well, aren't you parenting though?
Not anymore. She's off to college now.
Wow. How'd that happen?
She got older. When I got married to my current wife, her kids were nearly grown already.
Mm-hmm.
She's off to college now and doing great. She's a sparky little anarchist.
Excellent.
Off at Evergreen. We have arguments about politics all the time. But I've had all this time to myself and this time to kind of, you know, just focus so intently on all my writing and on my podcasting and all these creative endeavors and other things. I mean, I don't just sit at the computer all day, but I do other things. But I think that it's allowed me to kind of put more intention into it than I ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
It ceased to be just simply, I think that the news services that are in the pagan community now are deficient, and I'm going to try to give them something better. It sort of becomes sort of almost a mission. And it's funny because in the last 2.5 years, it's really when my profile has kind of exploded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I never dreamed I would be doing some of the things that I'm doing now, that I'd be on the board of Cherry Hill Seminary,
right,
or that I'd be attending the American Academy of Religion conference and having scholars go, "Oh, hey, it's Jason. What's up?" You know,
right.
And or being interviewed by you here on this podcast, for that matter. You know, it just seems like yesterday that I had picked up a copy of Modern Pagans and was reading about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of this weird, surreal thing where I've completely remade my own life by trying to broadcast to other people. And, you know, I think that the one thing about broadcasting that we always have to talk about is, you know, broadcasting and sending magic and intention out into the world and through the air not only changes the world around you and affects other people, but it also changes you deeply.
Of course.
You know, it really transforms you in ways that you could never really imagine. Like, you know, all of a sudden, after all this time, I used to be a painter. And in fact, up until I was about 30, my primary goal in life was not to be sort of the pagan blogger extraordinaire, but was actually to be a painter, a fine artist. But I had given it up because I had become completely disillusioned with the idea of doing art for money,
mm-hmm,
or trying to find some sort of way to do art. And it seems like I've just become unblocked again.
Mm-hmm.
And that unblocking has come after a lot of profound transformations due to the work I'm doing with the blog and the podcasting. It seems like I feel so much more secure in myself now that I feel safe to just do it and let it happen on its own for no particular good reason.
Well, and that is the power of spiritual practice and magic of any sort. You know, I had a similar experience, Jason, where when I was 17, I never would have imagined that Ruth Barrett would come up to me at a conference and hug me and thank me for my work.
Yeah.
You know, I was aghast. It's like, Ruth Barrett, how do you even know who I am? You were my hero when I was a teenager, you know? And it's just because I did what was in front of me every day. I just kept showing up to my work, and my practice unfolded, and the magic unfolded, and here we sit. And I love that. You know, we can set our intention and move forward, but as Uncle Al says, we must be delivered from lust of result.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't know how things will turn out, ever.
Yeah, no, I don't think I could never, if you told me 5 years ago that I'd be where I am today, I don't know if I would have believed my future self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just like, you know, you got a hug from Ruth Barrett and you're completely blown away. Like, I met Judy Harrow for the first time. I was like, oh my gosh, hey. And Judy's like, oh, thank you so much. You know, and I'm like, wow, hey. I'm like, I've read your papers. I'm like, you know, I have your book, you know. And, you know, it's always this kind of weird sort of moment where you realize that everything has changed in ways you never could have imagined because of what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's humbling. It's humbling. And I think that's the one thing that really has aided me in my relations with other pagans is that I think the more advanced you are on the path and the more work you do, the humbler you become, mm-hmm. because the more the universe completely like dumbstrucks you into like all the creative ways it like molds you, that you know you just realize how big and everything is and how much a part of it you are, and you know it just makes me even humbler. It makes me even less likely to want to gloat or brag about things or to really or even talk about like my deeply personal spiritual life. You know, I think there was a time when if someone asked me about like what I do in my bedroom with my private altars and things, like I would have been, oh yes, please let me tell you all about my very interesting spiritual life. But now I don't feel like I want to do that for me. I mean, I think other people, their purpose is to talk about their spiritual lives. But for me, it just seems like, you know, I don't need to have to do that anymore. You know, I think that I found a role for myself that's about what I'm doing and not about trying to prove how pagan I am.
Well, hopefully we reach a point where our personal practice just infuses everything we do, right?
Yeah.
Our daily devotions and our meditations and prayers and energy work and whatever else we do on a daily basis should then serve as the foundation and support our life and support the magic then that we can go out and work in the world. And the other thing I love about your story, Jason, is that that seed is in everyone who shows up for their lives. That seed is in everyone who sits at their altar every day or tries something new. And we never know what's going to grow.
Yeah.
And it's why I like that we're all so delighted with each other. You know? It's like, wow, what a great garden we're forming.
Yes. You know, and I think that I'm very proud of the fact that we have this wonderful, like the pagan blogosphere. I'm so amazed at how unique it is, mm-hmm. and how many amazing people are doing amazing things on it. I mean, I could never do what Anne Hill is doing
right.
online, and I could never do what Deb Oak is doing online, or Chaz Clifton, or Maka, or the several other hundred people who are doing just amazing things,
right.
like on a regular basis online, and we're each doing something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's so fascinating. I mean, like, you know, your blog, for instance, is so ecstatic, and you know, you're sort of the, you know, what's the guy who does free will astrology?
Oh, Rob Brezhnev.
You're like, your blog kind of reminds me of that.
That's funny.
In a good way. I hope that's not a
No, no, it's not. I like the Pope. Pope
okay.
Arto, his name used to be.
So, but you know, his sort of, he would go on these sort of ecstatic rants.
Right.
You know, and I think that, you know, your blog kind of is so moving that way, that it kind of pushes that all out there. And you have this, there's this palpable sense of energy from reading your blog, you know, and I think I kind of go for a more, you know, mainstream almost sort of journalistic vibe.
Right.
I'm kind of the meat and potatoes kind of guy. You know, I give you, you know, sort of a, well, here's what I think is important every day. And it's not necessarily about spiritual practice. It's more about, you know, how things are affecting our lives.
Right.
But that has its own place, you know, and I think everybody else, and we kind of created this world that has almost made this whole new form of how we all interact and talk with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've written an article recently where we talk about how in the old days of pagandom, it was all about the newsletters that people would send to each other.
Right.
You know, it was the pentacle or the, you know, the pagan, and everybody would send these, you know, letters to each other in Green Egg.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way we had to all connect with each other.
Right.
But now it's so much bigger and so much wider and so much more vibrant. And even though there's lots of idiots and noise and people writing about the bad day they had at work, you know, there's still so much wonderfulness out there that I kind of feel that despite the setbacks of this new media, I feel that the potentials and the stuff that's already out there that's so great really kind of makes up for it. It's sort of like, you know, if you ever like picked up a pagan magazine and you read it and you were a little disappointed, you know, because you're like, oh, well, you know, it was okay, you know. But it feels like, sometimes I feel like, but there's like a new pagan magazine every day.
Right.
Or every hour sometimes. And, you know, that's just so revolutionary. And there's, you know, all of these groups and things that are happening that I could never even have guessed would have happened, you know, 10 years ago. I mean, who could have guessed the whole idea of, like, other kin?
Right.
You know, that's just kind of, like, that still blows my mind a little bit. You know, or just the all of these religions that, like, who could have thought that there would be a syncretic, you know, Egyptian, Hellenic, pagan group that has its own publishing press?
Right.
And that they start out of nothing. I mean, it just kind of, it makes me all kind of verklempt inside when I think about it. And, you know, it really kind of brings home to me the revolutionary power that we all possess. And really, I think that, you know, as much as I like the old kind of root magic, the offerings and the floor washes and the things like that, and I still think those are all things that they have their own place, but I still think that it's kind of interesting how this new form has kind of emerged and how it has its own magic. And I remember when the internet first became a thing, when, like, people started talking about, well, I'm a net pagan and I'm on the internet, you know, surfing the web. And I remember that people would do, like, magic circles on chat rooms and
right.
things like that. And I used to always kind of think that was kind of not really my thing. You know, I'm not going to say it was, like, I'm not going to say it didn't have juice for the people who were involved in it, but it always seemed like, well, I'm not sure, because it was trying to recreate the terrestrial experience in the internet. And it always seemed like it didn't quite work for me. But now it seems like people have kind of had a while to kind of, you know, sit in the juices of the internet for a good 10 years or so. And we've really gotten to a point where we really are, like, creating the rituals online.
Well, I think we're doing what we've always done best. We've just learned how to do it. You know, we needed time, the time you were talking about. I think we're creating a tapestry from multiplicity and reconnecting it back into the wholeness. And so in that way, it reflects our theology, and that's a beautiful thing. Well, Jason, I want to thank you for joining me.
Okay.
Our time is up.
It's my pleasure to be here.
You can find the work of Jason Pitzel Waters at wildhunt.org. And as usual, I am at thorncoil.com. Let's all take a breath together again of this beautiful air. And remember that every time we breathe in, we're breathing in life. And every time we exhale, we're connecting with everything that lives. Holy Mother, in whom we live, move, and have our being, from you all things emerge, and unto you all things return. Blessed be, Jason.
Blessed be, Thorn.
Sing with me.